Okay, don't be too scared. You can put your headphones back on right now. Episode number 4 is on its way in your ears. And thank you for listening. My name is Unkwa Sonia, and I'm back in my bag again. Catch the weekly episodes every Tuesday, bonus interviews every Friday, and you've got multiple platforms to choose from. You could be hearing this on Apple Podcasts, on Podbean, on Anchor, or on Spotify. Yes, as an avid Spotify user, I'm glad this made the cut. So yeah, you've got 4 different platforms and a whole lot of ways to keep in contact as well. On the social, N_ASONYE on Twitter, _sometimesJR on Instagram. In today's episode, once again, it's a lady-centric episode aside from our final segment. Serena, once again, never gets what she deserves. Nicki Minaj, once again, is never about to smoke. And we pay tribute to, we'll call him a legend of our time. But let's begin.
You attacking my character. Yes, you are. You owe me an apology. You will never, ever, ever be on another court of mine as long as you live.
I've been on the road over the past few days, which means I missed a lot of stuff in transit that I would have liked to catch in person. Sometimes in-flight Wi-Fi can do some great things to keep you abreast, and other times I feel like you missed out. But thanks to platforms like Twitter, you don't really miss much. One of those things being what happened Saturday afternoon in Flushing, Queens, New York. It's supposed to be a historic day. 2 black athletes going at it in the women's U.S. Open final. One of them, the greatest athlete of her time. The other, a rising star in the sport who's beaten her once already. You had the storyline, you had the competition, and it seemed like for, I would say, one of the first times in quite some time, people were actually rooting for Serena Williams. And then the chair umpire put himself into the middle of it. Now, as more things devolved from the fallout, there came up videos of his interactions with Venus Williams back in Wimbledon, where he accused her of accepting coaching. To be honest, as much as it's easy to pile on against him, being an official is not an easy job, and being official also means that nobody likes you. No matter what you do, you could call the most perfect game, regardless of sport, and somebody's going to be upset. But irregardless of that, we now go back to the match in question. It is a championship match, and there are certain things that you just don't do. Now, people have issues, I think, with star players receiving different treatment because everybody wants to be a star and not everybody is. It's the same reason people get mad at LeBron for certain things. It's the same reason people get mad at Tom Brady for certain things. I am no Tom Brady fan. He's the best. That's the end of that discussion in my book. But there are certain calls that you don't make and there are certain things that you just don't do. And in a championship match, I feel like the chair umpire took control of the whole entire match. Thankfully, I know this is not an opinion that I share. Twitter had its outcry from all over the world. There were men's tennis players that came in and said, wow, that was a horribly officiated match. There were in-depth fans that were upset. There were not so in-depth fans like me that were upset as well. But the one thing that stands out most of all to me is that the official, while also not being able to be liked, also needs to have thick skin, and he did not. For those of you who are thinking about this and saying, but wait a minute, why aren't you talking about the way Serena reacted? First of all, let's be clear. When emotions are high in any regard, all bets are off. Moreover, we have seen worse behavior from NBA players, from MLB players, from pretty much any other sport. The fact that Serena Williams was able to voice her displeasure while being animated and frustrated without cussing, I couldn't do that. And if you say you could, you're a liar. She held enough composure to at least finish the match. Don't get me wrong. She got outplayed. Naomi Osaka outplayed her that day, and she deserved to win that crown. But to have all of that frustration around her, keeping in mind that it's not as if the tennis world or even casual observers weren't just aware that she hasn't won a Grand Slam yet since having her baby girl. She knows it too, which means she wanted it, especially at the U.S. Open, where she has had plenty of success. All those emotions bubbling up in her, and the chair umpire got mad because she called him a thief and a liar. You stole that game from me. A game penalty? Listen, I'm not that familiar. I've been getting more and more familiar as the weekend has gone on. But a game penalty because of coaching? I don't even understand that. I've had people who are familiar with the sports I've been in contact with most of the weekend. And what they said was, it happens, but it's still a very weird penalty. Like, tennis doesn't move quickly enough. Rather, tennis doesn't move slowly enough to get consistent coaching as if they're on the sideline or anything like that, at least from what I have observed. So it's kind of weird that a thumbs up becomes a coaching penalty. And then, of course, going into her speaking back to the chair umpire, say whatever you want, she has that right. And let me explain something to you. Star player treatment does matter, especially on big stages. If LeBron gets mad at a referee call, he only gets teed up if it's out of line. By no means was anything Serena Williams said out of line at all. And the worst of it was, I feel like people were so displeased at the way the match ended that they've taken it out on Naomi Osaka, and that's not okay. This Haitian-Japanese superstar did what she was supposed to do. And yes, when you beat the greatest, I think you become a superstar. Doesn't happen all the time, but especially in an individualistic sport like tennis, that's what's bound to happen. So nevertheless, and all the more, we have learned that tennis does not know how to treat its biggest superstar. Yes, you have Roger Federer on the men's side. Yes, you have Novak Djokovic. Nadal retired 2 weeks ago from the tournament. But nobody captivates like Serena Williams. You watch because you love her. You watch because you hate her. Whatever. She and her sister have dominated this sport for 2 decades. You'd think tennis would figure out a way to actually give her the respect that she deserves. Then again, it's tennis. What else is new? You know, it brings me back to a video that I continue to see circulating. And that's a video of Venus Williams, then 14 years old, being interviewed. I forget which outlet it is. But the interviewer asked her if she was confident she could beat the best in the world. And she said, yes. And he said, you're very confident about that. As an interviewer, I would probe a little bit more. But Richard Williams coming out from the back saying, all right, leave her alone. She's a kid, let her be confident. That really matters. And that's the sort of attitude I think that the Williams have taken into their sport since they got there. And that should be celebrated. When any other athlete shows their dominance, when they celebrate, when they cheer, it's seen as normal part of the game. Let one of them do it, and all of a sudden, there's a problem one way or another. It continually happens, and the reason why I say it's tennis, what else is new, is because somehow Maria Sharapova is seen as anywhere near her level. It's so odd to me. It's really odd, and people who have been following tennis and covering tennis for years are hearing me and going, yeah, duh. But Sharapova fits the mold of a quote-unquote prototypical tennis player. She's blonde, she's white, she's a model, whatever it is that you want from her, you can have it in that Sharapova package. She's not better. And I would argue, especially with everything that Serena's gone through, both as a mother and also being the best player in her sport, Serena Williams should be way more celebrated, but of course she isn't because she's not quote-unquote typical. Nothing about her is typical. And that is unique. That is beautiful. That's black excellence at its finest. But nobody really likes to celebrate black excellence until after the fact. Because the very same people who are calling her spoiled for being upset, like that idiotically racist cartoon that came out of Australia. That was actually one of the most ridiculous things I have ever seen. But those very same people will then do a complete 180 and go, wow, she was one of the best players of her generation. No, duh. Can y'all fathom the fact that she has been to major championships after childbirth? That's one thing I will never go through. One thing I'm somewhat grateful I don't have to go through, because that joint is painful and life-threatening. And yet she has been in the finals for both of them. Would she have wanted to win? Of course. Am I rooting for her to win? You bet I am. But it's time to cut the crap when it comes to Serena Williams. She deserves a lot more respect. She did not get it on Saturday. And it's something that she has deserved for a very long time. And especially with the class that she showed with Naomi Osaka on the podium, that's supposed to be the highlight of that young girl's life. And she was crying on the main stage because the public didn't know how to handle what just happened. And I'm not really blaming them, because I'm not sure what would have happened in that situation. She didn't deserve to be booed for winning. She outplayed her. But the chair umpire decided to be, he decided to be in the middle of it again. And we'll see if there's any fallout from that. I personally doubt it, because it'll probably get buried. But if there was ever a reason why Serena Williams is and has always been the people's champion, Exhibit A was last Saturday. This is King Kong. Yes, I'm King Kong. This is King Kong. Yes, Miss King Kong. I feel the need to bring this subject into today's show, because if you proclaim to be the best, you had better be about it. Even in a sport or a game where talking is how you get the job done, any form of communication, singing, rapping, whatever, if you're gonna be the best, you better back it up. And Nicki Minaj is not King Kong. Oh, it's King Kong. Yes, it's King Kong. No, it's not. Stop it. From all accounts from that night, you had words to say about Cardi B's child. She had a problem. And as she went for you, you retreated behind security. I thought you were about that action, Ms. Minaj. We're not throwing hands. We're not doing that. I don't get it. And what baffles me is that after the fact, she hopped on her show to say that Cardi B only got where she is through payola and because people felt sorry for her. Well, first of all, let me explain to you why I don't really stand for her. There's a reason why I really like and respect how she's gotten to this point. Yes, she got popping off of Instagram. Yes, she got on Love and Hip Hop, but she did something that not many of the stars, in quotation marks, of course, on that show do. She did a time and she got out. She was on there for, I want to say, max 2-3 seasons. Then she got, like, serious. She had already dropped the first two mixtapes, gangsta music, whatever, whatever. I didn't listen to either one of those. Not many people did. They just liked the fact that she was out there. But I did see her live at SOBs one night, and the girl was electric. She had stage presence. It had to be going, okay, there's something here. I don't remember what song she did. It was certainly not anything on Invasion of Privacy. Nothing resembling that in the slightest. But you saw that there was something there. And she pushed, and there it was. You can't mail it in going from Instagram to number one on the Billboard charts. You can't mail it in. I don't care how good your team is. Meanwhile, Nicki Minaj, yes, she's been up there for a while, and she is absurdly talented with her wordplay. But after that monster verse, name a song where you actually heard her and said, oh, she kind of bodied that. I brought up Barbie Dreams a couple episodes ago. I still stand on that. But other than that, aside from that MonsterVerse, that's it. Did she sell records? Yes, of course she did. Does she have great collabs? Yes, of course she does. But if you're going to proclaim and do all that talking about you being the best, back it up. If you're really gully and you're really going to do what you say you do in your songs, then yeah, go ahead and do it. Because at a certain point, you either bout it or you box. So what's up? That sort of thing really irritates me. If you're going to do the talking, where have you been? I don't understand. Nobody understands. You're already really good. Even if I don't like it, you have a whole fan base that lives on every word that you say. They won't pay to see your shows, but they will listen to nearly every word you say. Stop that childishness. Come on, yo.
Taking sips from the fountain of youth. If you ain't heard about the kid, then you out of the loop.
If you asked me to name a Mac Miller song off the top of my head, I would give you probably only two. I'd give you Dang, pretty recent joint with Anderson .Paak. And then I'd give you Good Evening from this very first mixtape, because I really liked the sample. So I'm not speaking as somebody who was really, really up about Mac Miller, but one thing I always observed about him was that he never tried too hard. You know, people would sort of poke their jokes on the internet or otherwise, saying that he was, you know, another white rapper, same mold as Eminem, blah, 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 blah. And he wasn't. But he was undeniably himself. And as I talked to a few of my friends, as I saw the tribute sort of roll in, I realized that he was a really important voice for a lot of people that were my age. And the scary thing about it is that he is my age and he is no longer here. And that shook me to my core. Because he had, I would argue, everything. He had the money. He was going to put out a great album. And it wasn't enough. He was tortured. And that's hard to come to grips to. Because everybody thinks that they have it, that somebody else rather has it better than they do. We covet each other all the time. You say, oh, he looks better than me, or oh, she has more money than me, this, that, and the third. And the truth of it is, we're all still trying to figure life out. And that young man suffered in silence for the majority of it. And it's weird because no matter how many times you can ask somebody, yo, are you good? Like, how are you feeling? Every time we try to do these checkups when tragedies like this hit home, they're kind of half-hearted. They're not really that genuine, because you just want to make sure that you eased your mind, that you did your part to make sure that somebody doesn't commit suicide or overdose because of something that you said to them. And yet, it's not enough. Because there has to be a certain level of comfort with whomever you're in contact with for you to open up to them and say, you know what? Everything really sucks right now. When people talk about going to therapy and things like that, it really works. It's a really important thing, because in the middle of all of the anecdotes about therapy, how, oh, they put you on drugs, things and that. No. A therapist is literally somebody you go to talk to and you work stuff out with. And sometimes even that's not enough. But genuine connections are really what help to ease the burden of what life is. And it's tough that a really, really, really talented individual is gone way too soon. I think there was a lot more that we could have heard from Mac Miller. He was constantly refining his craft. And the reason I liked that collab so much that he did with Anderson .Paak is because he sort of danced all over the beat rhythmically. The interchanges that he had with Anderson too, it was just, it was perfect. It was very sunny, still very punchliney, but it was authentic. I think we're still missing that in one way or another. And it's my hope that in one way or another, there's authenticity at the beginning or the end of whatever we do. Rest in peace, Mac. Little bit on the short side this week, but no worries. There's still more content coming this week. I should preface this by saying that I'm in San Diego. That's where work travels have taken me. So, yeah, if you've ever been to San Diego, just know that when I say I might not leave, tell everybody else that, yeah, I may not leave. There is a bonus interview coming this week. Dustin Petzold, the editor-in-chief of CrookedScoreboard.com, which will be making its comeback. That interview with him will be dropping this Friday. And the best part about it is we actually met up in person. He's now relocated to Houston. He went from the East Coast now to Houston, and I got a chance to catch up with him. So that all is going to be very, very cool. Please make sure you subscribe to the podcast on its various platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and Podbean. To wrap up this episode, I would like to bring up a song by one John Legend. Now, John Legend was the first black man to complete the EGOT this past weekend. For those who don't know what the EGOT is, there are only a handful in history, and those are people who have won an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony Award. And John Legend has now won all four. And one of my favorite songs of his is actually from his Love in the Future album, So Gone. And to end this week, I'll at least give you part of the second verse spoken. Everybody wanna follow the crowd, but I belong in the front singing loud, and I'll go solo. With that, thanks for tuning in. See you next week.